Hey, welcome to If You've Come This Far. This is the podcast that my buddy Sean and I do, where we set out to talk to really interesting people who are doing work and hopefully making the world a better place along the way. And so this go around is with a really neat woman, Amy, who is involved in a sport that both Sean and I sort of obsess over. Maybe that's too strong a word, but a sport that we love. Sean, who is this?
Don't roll me into your obsessions. That could be a scary place to go. I will admit that I was probably more or less obsessed with it. Golf, let's say the word, a long time ago, but that obsession has certainly lessened. But no, Amy Smith is with us in this episode of the podcast, and yeah, really interesting to talk to Amy. Amy is a performance coach working with PGA golfers, and she just happened to have a relationship with my brother Dean and Patton Kazire, who's the golfer that he works for, and had a wonderful day a month or so back where two of the golfers that she coaches both won, Patton being one of them, on the same day. So it was kind of really exciting for Amy. And I looked into her background and I thought, okay, not only is she a performance coach for golfers, which we dig, but she's a woman dealing with male golfers. She comes from a corporate sales background. And so there's just a lot about her that that I thought would be really interesting for our listeners to learn about.
Yeah, we didn't talk about this, but in my mind, I was thinking about the parallel in professional tennis, where you've got the tennis player on the court, and then the camera constantly goes up to that person's box, where you've got sometimes more than five or six people up there, each of them coaching a different part of that player's game and whatever. And so it's interesting to hear from Amy and think about how coaching of golfers is maybe evolving, but how different coaches fit in different ways. And it sounds a little bit like Amy is sort of bringing together and coordinating, maybe partly based on her corporate success and experience, but coordinating all these different facets of coaching.
Yeah, and she talks about it, right? And I will admit, I was interested in asking her too, because you are obsessed. So now you get a little bit closer to someone who's working with PGA golfers, and that might make you feel kind of cool. I don't know. Did it? So I was doing it for you, really. I was getting her here for you.
You are such a mensch, and I can't thank you enough. I felt important when I got to meet Dean, you know, so.
Oh, God. Oh, I hope he doesn't listen to this episode. Holy shit. Yeah.
Dean, I mean that too. Don't listen to this guy.
Right.
It was a good conversation. Amy's neat. I love the sport. I'm not obsessed with, I'm also not as obsessed with it as I was as a kid, but it is fascinating to watch. I was going to say all these players struggle to make it, because there is a lot of that, but it's just an interesting challenge to be good enough, but then try to make it on the tour. So
it is so hard. And, you know, just, and I talk about it, you know, I'm just so fascinated by people that do that for a living and what it does, you know, the mental aspect and emotional aspect of it, because it is so hard, and there is, so you know, there's not a lot of room for error, and then how does her skills and what she does and help them to perform and live the kind of life they want to live, how does that translate into us living our lives? What can we learn from that to just get better living, rather than just hitting a little white ball that's not moving?
Yeah. And last thing I'll say on this, it makes me also think about the joy I think I see when these guys get a chance to become teammates during Ryder Cup and President's Cup. I think they probably missed that from their childhood. And it's just such a nice change of pace to be in it with, you know, arm in arm, you know, with their boys. So
I will say, it does seem like the Europeans get a little bit more excited than we do, but that's for another.
Well, they beat us almost every time, it seems
like a drum.
Yes.
I mean, so, you know, That's another conversation for another
conversation.
Day.
All right. Well, let's
maybe we'll get Keegan Bradley on the show and have a call.
Because it's a different challenge. Yeah, I love it. All right. Well, we'll table that for now. And in the meantime, we'll move on with this awesome conversation.
Here's Amy.
Hey, just got off the phone with your brother. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I do like morning huddles at the beginning of the week with players and caddies. And so they were up last. So just got off with the two of them.
Yeah. How was their mind?
Today Dynamite he was on. Pat was a little bit frustrated, but that happens.
Yeah.
Especially coming off the performance that he had last. So to be expected, it's a really interesting. I started thinking about, and nice to meet you.
This is Chris, Amy, Chris.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. I have a very interesting job right now. So, I did take a listen to Dynamite's interview. That was good to kind of get perspective from the caddy. But yeah, there's so much.
Yeah. And you saw that he had a little procedure done on his face. Did you see that?
I did. He didn't even tell me. We left Vegas. He never said a word about it. And then he sends me a picture and I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So wait, Chris, who did, Patton or Dean?
Dean had some skin cancer removed, like from right below his eye.
I mean, like right on the eyelid.
Yeah.
Oh.
So his face is a mess.
Not good. No. For sure.
Not usually good to begin with, and now it's even actually might help him look even more attractive. I said he's going as Frankenstein for Halloween.
It's kind of scary. My husband had skin cancer and he too works in golf. And so his was in the inside of his ear. And I noticed a dark spot really flat inside his ear. And I could see it. He said, oh, it's just a freckle. I'm like, I don't know, man. I wish you could see it. So I took a picture, showed him. And I said, I feel like it's changing colors. And sure enough, it was skin cancer. And it actually was really deep. So they had to do a skin graft from inside his cheek to put on inside his ear, because it was it almost went all the way through the back of the ear.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
No.
Coincidentally, I have a dermatologist appointment today, this afternoon. Oh. So that's...
Yeah. Granted, the older we get, we got to be careful.
Yes, we do.
My legs, I've had a few on my legs.
I think we're all the same age. Yeah. From what I get. Did you all graduate from college in 92 as well?
Oh, no. Thank you.
Well, maybe it was Dynamite. Somebody was on the
podcast. Yeah, it was Dean, because I graduated in 85.
Oh, you did? Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I guess I didn't listen clearly.
I'm 92, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
thanks. He's gonna. He loves that, Amy.
I do love
Chris,
that.
Yeah, Chris loves that. Well, thanks for coming to hang out with us. Before you got on, Chris was saying, "Well, Amy, Michigan and Michigan State, they played each other this weekend."
Yeah, I didn't even watch.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? I know. So here's what's happened. I'm the youngest of nine. I have six older brothers. And they are such sports fanatics to the point it almost made me, I don't want to say like despise it, but it was so much of my life that I really kind of was like, what the fuck else is there to do? We said to watch football on a Saturday. I want it. And so that's really, I have fun with it, but being now out of Michigan, I get into it at certain times, but I'll tell you the truth. I've been so busy.
Yeah.
And I actually was working with a couple of new players this weekend that I met with. So it's kind of taken me away from some of those things that maybe I would have done, but just temporarily.
Yeah. So one could read that as a sly, skirting of the question, which is where do your allegiances lie? Now, I'm not going to force the issue, but
no, I'll be honest. When it comes to Michigan State basketball all day long, I love coaches. I love his enthusiasm for his players. The things, he could be controversial, but back in the day, what he did for some of the boys from Flint, where I was born and raised, Flint Township.
Yeah.
I just found him really pioneering and developing confidence and giving opportunity. So I've had a huge following for Coach Izzo, and I love watching him on the side of the court. I mean, if you're there in person, it's always a show.
Looks like he's going to have a heart attack every game.
I mean, it's just like intense, right? It's intense. And he has such a strong presence on campus, or did when I was there. For football, it really goes back and forth. But I would say overall, it's the Big House, primarily because most all of my siblings and nephews and nieces, we have a strong, strong following to Michigan. There's 100 people as of today in my immediate family. So we had a family fest this past summer up in Michigan, and all of us got together with our kids and their kids, and the 100th baby was born. So it's kind of, when I tell you there's a massive movement towards Michigan, my brother's pontoon on Lake Charlevoix is like SSI. I think it's Michigan Boyke. I don't even know. They all have yellow and blue boats. They all have the flags. I mean, it's just obnoxious Michigan fans. And so
I do want to say that what you get the benefit of is being able to pick Michigan State hoops, which is, right. And Michigan football. So you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So let's start. So we wanted you to come talk to us for a couple of reasons. You know, you referred to Dynamite earlier, talked about Dean. Dean is my brother. And that's kind of how we learned about you. You're working with his, Dean's a caddy, and you're working with his golfer, Patton Kizzire. And it's what's interesting to me. So first of all, Chris and I both love golf. We love the fact that you're shaping men in some form or fashion, which we're going to talk about. And so and you're friends with my brother. So we thought it'd be great to have you come and talk to us, and for people to learn about how your life, how you made this process from a high powered sales leader to coaching, and why that's important to you and what you love about it. And so we want to just kind of explore all that with you today. Cool.
Sounds good.
So first of all, I'm interested in, how did you get into sales? Let's just start there.
Oh, damn. I was the young daughter of a very successful family. And I say this because everybody was, most of my family was in medical, in a form of doctors, high level surgeons, things of that nature. And when I came along, I always said I wanted to be a doctor, but I really didn't even know why I said that. And it wasn't until I was at Michigan State, and it was, I think, my sophomore year, I traveled abroad for, let's say, a poli-sci program or something. I can't remember what I was there for. And I got a scholarship to go back. And when I went back, they had me come back to promote overseas study back to Michigan State. So they sent me to all these universities. And I suddenly was speaking in front of groups of people. And I'm like, wow, I like this. Maybe I should go into marketing or sales. This was really, it felt more along the lines of what I enjoyed. So I came back, changed my major from pre-med to just business. Still great. And the main thing was, you didn't go over 5 years in my family. And you always went for additional education. So I knew I wasn't going to be done no matter what. And I got out of there still in 4 years. And then I went and got my master's. Didn't really know why, because I decided not to go to medical school. I thought about law school, but I was like, in my family, I think I'm one of two that have the least amount of education. Okay. So it was it was expected. You just keep going to school.
Yeah.
And when I finished my master's, I started working at the hospital. And I was working in outreach marketing, and I knew I wanted to do something more, but I didn't really know what. And in that outreach marketing, I developed a lot of their ancillary programs. So labs and cardiovascular and all of those clinics, I helped them promote their practice owned facilities to refer back to the hospital. Mm-hmm. At the time, I got approached by a handful of pharmaceutical companies right off the bat saying, we want you to come work for us. So that's how I started. I went and I spent a short stint in pharmaceuticals before I got to medical device, and then just moved up in my career as I went along.
Can you give us a couple beats on your parents, assuming that they're at least partly responsible for this extreme education that you and your siblings have gone through?
Yeah, I will. They were very young, much like your family, from what I heard on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I believe my mom was 16 and my dad was 18 when my oldest brother was born. Mm. And big Catholic family, they actually were so disciplined in how they raised us as a family. Like, we didn't, failure wasn't an option. My oldest brothers both went to Harvard right out of school. I mean, like, graduated. My oldest brother was at Harvard when I was born. And, you know, my dad worked in the shop as an electrician, and my mom never worked until I was born. She had me at 34. My grandparents were incredibly involved in our lives. It was like I had two sets of parents, and we had such a, like a community of love between our aunts and uncles. And I call them aunts and uncles, all these best friends, these Catholics that, as far as I knew, were my aunt and uncle until I was old enough to understand they weren't my aunt and uncle. That my mom went back to school and started, got her nursing degree, got her master's, got two masters by the time I was born, and then went to work. And my grandma basically took over watching me. My dad was the hardest working individual you would know. Unfortunately, had a health issue. And somewhere along, I would think it was fifth grade, he went on disability. He had a lung removed, was on oxygen most of my life, but they wanted more for their kids than what they had. And so, I mean, when I tell you a household strict with grades and commitment and just doing the right things, community, that's the way we were raised. And so I always used to say I was the least successful boy key. And, you know, today I wouldn't say that, but I said that as a child, because I really did feel that way for many years, because I didn't really have a clear definition of what it was I was going to do. In fact, hell, I think I just figured it out at 54. So that's me.
So what does success mean to you then?
It's changed. You know, back in the day, I would say it was a title. It was accomplishing more than what I had before. Mm-hmm. When I reached that title and that income and all that I aspired so to be back in corporate, I realized that wasn't success. So it was more the typical success, the money, title, the accolades, you know, empowering others, building teams, like all of that really mattered to me, but I wasn't fulfilled. I realized at that point, what I really wanted was to take what was my God-given talent and impact others and empower others to ignite others and bring out more for everybody. And, you know, success to me has evolved. It's been a journey, and it's really being aligned with my passion and my purpose, and so that I can serve and have a lot of fun doing what I'm doing.
So at some level, when you were leading teams, eventually you were doing that. I mean, you were motivating them and you were guiding them and you were instructing them. This, what you're doing now as a performance coach, has a lot of the same elements, right? I mean, you're doing some of that, but why is it, how's it the same and how is it different?
Well, what's same is that, you know, I believe rather you were the CEO of the company, you're the CEO of your business. And so everyone that worked for me, I always instilled a component of that accountability to being the CEO of your business, the CEO of your life, because no matter what your title is, you and only you motivate you, right? And so how do we bring out your authentic self, so that you're motivated to do more for yourself, because ultimately then you contribute to the greater good of the whole. Right. And so the similarities, I would say, is that's exactly the common thread, is helping people get back to understanding why they're doing what they're doing in the first place. What brought you to this career? How do we ignite that passion again so that you can prevail through shit, obstacles and adversity, and, you know, celebrate along the way? The difference is, I will say, is drastic, though, because I'm really in the role that I serve today as it relates to golf and the golfers. I'm bringing together a team. So historically, they would say that each player had these individual coaches for various areas of their game. Rarely, if at all, did the coaches ever interact, mm-hmm. or did the caddy get on a call with the coach. Mm-hmm. And so I am bringing a CEO mindset to the player where I sit down and we describe, we chart out what's their vision, what's it going to take, who's their team members, what do they need, how do they lead, how do they show up so that the caddy can be the best version of themselves and bring value. And so it's almost like they don't know what to expect from me yet. Truthfully, they never know what's coming, yeah. but they're seeing a different energy as it relates to their success, because the whole team is moving in the same direction now for the same goals. And there's a lot more harmony in the approach.
Yeah.
And that's really creating a sense. One of the things, and I'm jumping all over and I apologize.
No, that's okay. No.
One of the things I noticed with the players immediately was this isolation, this loneliness. Every player I work with has some form of it's all on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they compete against themselves. They have to discipline themselves. And if they win, they say everybody won. But if they lose, they take full responsibility uh-huh. to themselves.
Yeah.
And yeah. that's the difference, is helping them really develop a new muscle of the mind to overcome those self-defeating behaviors and limitations. And I call it this negative loop, helping them reframe obstacles into opportunities. And, you know, can't go into any specifics, but there's a hell of a lot of work around that, just getting them confident in their discipline to their thoughts.
Mm. Hey friends, if you're liking the show, please hit that follow button. And thanks to our sponsor, Half Acre Beer Company. If you've been in Chicago for more than 5 minutes, someone's probably handed you a Daisy Cutter Pale Ale. It's become an iconic beer, and it's just one of many great ones, which include Chocolate Camaro, Big Hugs, Space, and Benthic. So cheers to Half Acre for supporting if you've come this far. And now back to the show. Well, so let me ask one clarifying question before you explain that. Are you working with, I think you mentioned this, but are you working with the putting coach or the short game coach and the other, and the strength
anybody.
Conditioner
and the wives
anyone
and girlfriends that are in the.
Absolutely. Anyone. And they all, I mean, we have group texts. I have one-on-ones with them. I go to breakfast with them. I go to lunch with them. So the beauty of what I know from my experience was how to build a winning team. I mean, that's really what made me successful throughout my career. And what I'm doing with the players is taking the team that they have and making them more productive, more accountable, more engaged. And if there's somebody on the team that's not holding their weight, we talk about what's the right direction. And so there's a little bit of that, and making sure that the team brings the vision to life. And that's a big part of it. You know, golf can be, and you know, both of you, far more than I know about golf. So the beautiful thing is, I don't know a hell of a lot about golf. I mean, I might tell you, I don't really know shit. Like, it's great. And I, you know, somebody said, well, why golf then? And I'll tell you my story of that one day, yeah. or in a minute. But yeah. I know enough to be dangerous, but I don't want to know more than what I know, because if I know too much, then the innocence of what I bring is lost. Mm-hmm. So I purposely will not be any further educated on the game of golf. Mm-hmm.
I actually don't know why that would help you do what you do anyways. I mean, I think about the fact that all these guys, for the most part, have hit a million golf balls. Mm-hmm. And so what is the difference for each one of those guys that just makes them perform in the work that they're doing? So, I mean, to know.
You know, it's really interesting. And I can't say the names of the players I'm working with.
Yes, yet, right.
As you're aware. I will say that no two players approach their practice or discipline the same either. I have one that wants to be on the course all day, every day off, you know, when there's not a tournament. He's got a very rigid schedule that he follows. I have another that does that part time. I have one that refuses to do that. He'll go maybe 30 minutes twice a week to work on yeah. the area that he needs to work on.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And what's interesting about it is, you know, in like corporate, we could say, if you do, or we thought we could say, if you do these five things, you will have success.
Right.
However, you know, you will meet the goals and the metrics that we're setting before you. If you do these five things, we guarantee it. It is no five things for each player. There's nothing the same about it. You know, we can all argue that the mind is a powerful tool. So mindset's 100% a part of it. And them having the discipline to their capacity, that's how I refer to it. They're naturally gifted, so they've got to figure out the discipline to maximize their capacity to perform. I try to help them in that area by working with their coaches and honing in on maybe a narrow routine that would serve them to enhance that, you know, next shot to the betterment. But the magic formula is really within the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amy, how many Amy Smiths are serving the PGA right now?
This is a great question. I was asked this Golf Channel recently as well. And I'll tell you, I don't know. Because I don't think there's a lot from what I'm being told in this that bring it in this level and what I'm doing. And I'm not a psychologist. And there's a lot of psychologists, sports psychologists, and organizations that are more corporate driven that serve players. But, you know, I say I'm a boutique. It's me. My brand is Amy. Mm-hmm. There's nobody that's going to come work for me. I can't duplicate my experience and expertise and my trainings in such a way that I feel like I could consistently deliver the results that I know I can get by working one-on-one with the player and the teams. So I don't have an answer to your question. I can tell you it's rare, and there's a lot of excitement around what I'm doing in the relation as it relates to bringing everyone together. It's like the first, every time I sit down with a new player, they say this is a different approach than something I haven't seen.
So talking about that different approach, I mean, there's plenty of stories about the day that Patton won. Okay. So you had Patton as a winner, and then you and I'm forgetting his name.
Paul Peterson,
yeah, on the Corn Ferry on the same day, two winners. Yeah, who wouldn't want that kind of marketing for their business? And so, you know, the articles talked about your approach. You know, I whether right or wrong, you know, making fun, hugging trees and Dean doing push-ups. And so talk a little about your mind.
You know, each player is different. And what I love is that they were so honest that they told the truth, what they did for game day huddle, right? Like that's half the battle, being able to step out and be you.
Right.
And both those players had no problem saying, hell yeah, I've been working with somebody and our team, and here's some things that we do on game day huddle.
Yeah.
That's not to say that that's the discipline of the work that we do, because clearly we can't just sing and hug trees and go barefoot and think that we're going to have a performance like both Patton and Paul had on that day.
Yeah.
What I will tell you that represents, though, is the playfulness and the passion and getting them into a calm, grounded state before they go out and they perform. For Patton and Dean, it was a lot of what you just referenced. I mean, we just actually on our call today talked about, you know, we had a break. We've had a week off because they had a 3-week run. And so we took some time just to do life again. And what I thought was really interesting was Patton said, I miss my routine. I'm ready to get back to my morning routine. And so the morning routine is a big part of bringing the passion alive for the player. It's what they do by themselves before they step into, quote, the arena with their team. So that could involve meditation, reading, breathing, scribing, journaling, hugging trees, grounding. It could be, you know, coloring, mindfulness coloring. It means a variety of things to just hone them back to their passion.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that day was really amazing, though.
That was a good day.
I was in Nashville with Paul because when he told me I'm ready to win a championship, I called his wife and I said, I'm getting on a plane. He's ready. She goes, "Do you think we should go?" I said, "Let's go." He won. Yeah, that's great. You know, I got to tell you the story. I get there and I'm walking with him outside the ropes and I leave. He doesn't know his wife is coming. So I leave to go make sure that Wyatt and Maggie got there okay. I was dropping off my backpack because I flew in that morning, literally just had a backpack because I was going to fly out that night. That didn't happen. We ended up staying, having a celebration, all that good stuff. So when I left, I was gone for two holes. I came back and he walks up next to the ropes and said, "About time you came back." And then he three birdies, won the championship. And I'll tell you what's amazing. I know, they know, when I walk with them, they feel an energy. We all do, the whole team. And it's because we're so transparent in our communications that we know, I know what Dynamite's working on and it's going to do to reinforce Patton. I know what Patton's working on and they know I know. So just having the three of us in a moment, it's really synergistic. And more importantly for me, it's watching the two of them. I'm really trying to be on the outside coaching them up, right? And similarly, like Monday through Wednesday, when the coaches come out and help them get ready, I sit down with their coaches and talk about what are they working on? What are you seeing? Here's what I'm seeing in resistance from a body language, from, you know, just what I know is going on in conversation. So we can bring together and push through faster some of the things that may be holding them back or they don't see that they need to have reinforcement to. So it's not it's a combination of everything.
Well, and when you talk about that, it's interesting because Dean will say, you know, as a caddy, there's the three precepts to show up, keep up, and shut up. And you may or may not, do you agree with that? Because I maybe it's different for every team.
I weave it in. So I don't agree with shut up. I do for Dean.
Yeah.
Unless we've agreed. Well, no, I do for Dean unless we've agreed that if this occurs, Dean has to do these things on the course. So there might be a word that he says, one word. And we're really big on one word. And the reason for it is when they're in focus, if you say too much, they're going to blame you. They're going to say, "You fucked up my game."
Yeah. Yeah.
And part of what I do when I go out and practice with the players is I try to disrupt their game. Yeah. I try to piss them off. I do piss them off.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to help them realize that they have to be in focus and not let the things they can't control derail them on a course. So Dean knows when to say the word, when to reaffirm an affirmation, how to ask a question that Patton can hear it in the moment, but we try very simple communication, no overload. Because if you take them too far off, you're going to mess up their game.
It is a fascinating area to focus on, though, when you think about the work and the fact that you know the difference between one stroke, one badly hit ball can be the difference between a big paycheck and nothing. And so it's just that minuscule. And sure, there's a lot more that's involved in it. It's not just that one stroke, but sometimes it surely feels like it. Do you explore that aspect of the game at all?
So the aspect of the score?
Just more I always think about this idea that, okay, like I said, these guys have hit a million golf balls and there's a day or, you know, an errant shot that results in a double bogey that costs them. And again, it's not just that one, but I think sometimes it feels like that one. And so, you know, how do you get by that and recognize that it's an accumulation of things that result in the ending?
That's where a lot of patience comes in. So we do explore that. We do talk about, we do post-round huddles. We talk about very, very effectively what went well. What do we need to continue to work on? What do we need to stop? We try not to put as much focus on the things that didn't go well as the ones that did, because we try to take the natural strengths and reinforce them. However, if they lost their shit and they got a double bogey or a bogey because of a breakdown, then we're going to talk about what triggered the breakdown, what went wrong. Either it's rarely, it really truly is rarely the actual shot. People think it is. It's the approach to the shot that goes wrong.
Yeah.
So if their mind is not there and they're already in fear, they're already in anxiety, they already have a failure, and they didn't let go of the shot before that, maybe they didn't put it on the green, they wanted it over here, went in the bunker, whatever. It's helping them let it go, get present, and see the next shot. And so I tell people, I've identified this, whether it's me thinking I've identified it or really I've identified something, it seems to be having weight. I really look at the approach and the timing to the shot. So I time my players, not as they are timed. So they only have what, I don't even know, is it 43 or 45 seconds, something like that. I look at how many seconds from the time they do their practice swing do they take to walk to the ball? How many seconds do they stand over the ball? And what's their body language that's going on at the time? Mm-hmm. And then when they hit the ball, when I see inconsistency there, the shot's never going to go the way they want it. Yeah. When I see the consistency and I have timed, I know exactly what I believe for Patton is his time to approach and his time over, that he can effectively shoot the shot that he wants.
Yeah.
I can't go into the details of that, but I will tell you, getting them in a confidence of the pre-shot determines the shot. So 9 out of 10 times, you guys, that's to do with letting the mind focus on the moment.
Yeah.
And then they can do what's natural. They can grip the club the way they're supposed to it. They keep their body. They keep their head, you know, in this position that they should. They're not lifting and going down and all of the things that happen when there's doubt or when they're not in the moment.
That has me thinking about that stage that Sergio Garcia went through, Sean, where he was waggling like 15 times before every shot. And even if that was consistent, I think it was a case of something going on in his head that was off. But I want to ask a question related to something another professional athlete said that I think is related to this, Amy, but I'm assuming you saw Roger Federer's commencement speech at Dartmouth. Mm-hmm. Did you see that, Sean?
I parts of it. Yeah.
He talks about how the guy won like however many grand slams and 80 some percent of his matches. I don't know if these numbers are right, but that when asked what percentage of total points he won, 52%. Yeah. And so the point is to move on. And so you talked about the pre-shot routine, Amy. I'm wondering about how much you talk with the players and their teams about, okay, what do you do when you do, you know, flare one to the right and it's sitting under a tree and you think you got a bad break, but it was a shitty shot, blah, blah, blah. Like, is that recovery a part of what you guys work on?
And that's a lot of the work I say that we do off the course. So I try to create behaviors and awareness to behaviors off the course that can be an empowerment on the course. What do I mean by that? You get cut off by a car and you're like, fuck, did you not see me? Right. And what happens immediately? Your body gets tense. You're distracted. Now you're not even thinking about where you're going. You're flustered. So I try to help them do audits of thoughts. We work on words, associations, and reframing negative patterns of behaviors and thoughts so that when they're on the course, it's a natural tendency. I had a bad shot. What do I need to make that shot get there? This is what I'm going to do. I will do this and move forward. It's not as simple as saying it. We've got a lot of work that again, like when I talk about how the day one, the fun things we did in the morning, but today alone, I corrected some words in our conversation. We move away from words like I think to words like I know and I will. And so I call it definitive language. And I take audit and conversations with my players and team. And we were doing a great job, some of our teams. And when you take a break, that means they might have taken a break in life too on this. And so we get back to surrounding our environment, bringing, like you talked about, the wives or the girlfriends, all of us using a different communication language that more effectively reframes obstacles into opportunities. So it's, we put focus on it to your question, but the focus is move on. Yeah. If we need to reflect on something because there's a technical challenge, that's where the caddy and the player and I agree. Then we give it to the coach so they go practice that. But on the course, we move on. We cannot hold back, because if we hold back, we've already missing the next shot. They joke with me because I say a foot in yesterday and a foot in tomorrow and you piss all over today. Yeah. My grandma actually said it to me. I don't know why. I remember it vaguely.
Wait, can you say that more slowly? I missed that.
I swear my grandma taught me this. Thelma did this. A foot in yesterday and a foot in tomorrow and we're pissing all over today.
Yeah. I love that so much.
So I say this to the players. If you're out there and you have a foot in the last shot, and you're not real, and you're stuck, you're pissing all over the next shot.
Yeah.
You know, we can't have a foot in, but we have to be a foot in now, because that's really all that you have before you to correct. We can reflect. All of us in life can reflect on things that we should, could, would have done different, regardless of if it's a sport or life, right? But if you miss the moment right now, then the reflection won't even carry you forward.
So let's talk about that for a second. So I want your perspective on how you think what you do with golfers translates to the normal person just living their life. Because to me, but certainly being in the golf business, being a golfer, playing professional golf, the being in the present moment and the just what you said, the experience of the past and the future and the present moment is never more exact, if you will, than during that game. So what do you think keeps back, having worked with these guys, anyone from performing, from living their best life, for being their authentic self? Can you translate what you do with these guys into your theory about why the rest of us might not be the best we can be?
Oh, that's a great question. So, gosh, this is going to go deep.
Yep.
I always wanted to do something other than I was doing. And people would look at me and say, why? You're so successful. You have such a great career. Things are going so well. Wow, you just got another promotion. You won President's Club again. Oh, my God, you're the Pinnacle Award winner. And I'd say, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, I was good at what I did, but I didn't love what I did. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I want for others on and off the golf course is to empower, to be that catalyst of transformation, that people go back and either discover or rediscover what was their passion, what is their passion. And a lot of the work I do initially is we go way back, and I don't mean psychology back. I ask a simple question. Every one of my members of the teams I work with write a letter to themselves, from a 7-year-old to their current self. And I get no boundaries, no parameters, no idea what that letter looks like. It gets met with resistance every single time. People want to know what the freak I'm looking for, how to write it, what do they need, what am I supposed to include? I don't know what you want from me. Why do I have to do this? I mean, you can only imagine the hesitation, because all of a sudden they're faced with like, I got to talk to me. Mm. What am I going to tell myself that's not bullshit? Because I'm going to be able to call bullshit because I know myself. And what that does for me is immediately gets a grounding of that I can build trust from. They're vulnerable. So I want people to be vulnerable when they go and discover their passion again. I want the truth to be told to yourself of why did you stop going after your dream? Or what is what happened when?
Yeah.
It's never
what are you afraid of.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a great example of that. I believed wholeheartedly I needed to follow in the footsteps of my brothers. And God bless them that I had a great family. But when I got older and I was telling my one brother this, he said, "Why? I didn't give a shit what you did. I just wanted you to be happy." And I'm like, you didn't care. And this like has haunted me my whole life. Thanks for telling me at 45 that you really, and it was really eye-opening for me.
Well, can I stop you there? Because I think that's a big one for a lot of us, right? Which is we're thinking other people are thinking something about us, which informs who we are, which
100%.
Yeah.
And when that was said to me, I kind of stepped back. And this journey to where I am today started to unfold.
Mm.
And, you know, I needed to hear it that way in that moment. I just lost my mom and I was talking to one of my older brothers and someone I've always looked up to and just said, you know, yeah, you've been really amazing and set high bars for our family. But, you know, however that conversation took place, all I recall is he's looking at me seriously and saying, I don't care what you do. Yeah. I just want you to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I work with people, it's really going to find what's their passion. If you're anything like the most of the individuals I've worked with, either corporately or players, we have a self-perception, but then we let life shape our perception. And then we feel obligated to that perception. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes guilt, you know, that you're letting people down, or guilt that you're taking time away to do you. Like, now you've got all these responsibilities, and all the while there's just this little voice inside of you saying, God, I'm so unhappy. I wish I could do this. I wish I would. Why can't I? And it's for me, it was more of a comparison with myself than it was with others.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't like trying to keep up with the Joneses. I was trying to like do Amy, like just be Amy. So when I finally went out on my own, it's time to be me. It's time to be me. And that's kind of something I live by. And, you know, and keep believing, because if you keep believing, when you see things as possible, I believe more things show up. You attract more of what you want versus limiting opportunities that you might not see that are right before you because mm-hmm. you're so narrow focused.
Amy, are you still doing executive coaching, or is it all golf these days?
I do. I have a handful of corporate clients. I'm weeding out of that, but I have two particularly that I most likely will not leave. One for sure. The other we'll see. So as I've started to ramp in this area and I really found my niche, I've fully, you know, went back and was transparent and they're so excited. I mean, they're so excited for me because hopefully I'm a beacon of hope and an inspiration for them as well. What I found I was doing in a lot of the executive coaching was coaching, but then being a business strategist because of what my background is.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
It wasn't what I wanted to be doing. And it was really hard for me to just be a coach because I saw the answers, and that's not really good coaching. And I realized in corporate, then they wanted me in more as a consultant too. And so I just wasn't the direction I wanted to go about, like corporate.
And so if you can bear with me for a second. So you, are you finding that your cup is more filled by the work with these golfers and their teams? And if so, how?
It's overflowing.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fun. It's something new. So I believe that as we get older, we reinvent ourselves, and it's something new. And I see now what the little girl in me wanted to do is happening. And I didn't know how it was going to look. I used to say I wanted to be a talk show host. Imagine that. I thought I was going to be Kathy Lee when we just was looking for a co-host. I swear to God, I thought it was going to be me. Must have been this. And I see potential, and I keep getting asked, what's your cap? Like, how many is too many? And I don't know. I can tell you right now with the players I have, I'm able to do a really effective job. And I do know I can't take on too many because I'm really in depth with the team.
Yeah.
And so I'm really being very particular on the right players that will serve me and I can serve them alike, meaning there's a commitment to each other to be the best. I mean, I don't want to be a crisis coach because, you know, I came in and I wouldn't even say it was a crisis, but I came on with Patton when we were trying to get something done. Now I want to see him like consistently be the champion that he's built to be.
Mm-hmm.
So
that leads to my next question. Like, what are your metrics of success other than wins and earnings?
Momentum, moving forward, building resiliency, being able to be in the moment and see the possibility. So yeah, wins are great. We do look at FedEx Cup rankings and, you know, overall, like what status rankings they need to achieve. I can't take that out because that's critical to them being able to play on tour. But within that, we build out the foundation and the pillars of how we would measure success in a given period of time. And then we look ahead a year. And what does that look like? And where does that show up? And so we build just like you would in corporate, key performance indicators, and we have business reviews, and we bring the team together. And how are we? I mean, we're in it right now in that phase with some of the work I've been doing with teams. And so it's really based on the vision of the player, because they are the CEO. Mm-hmm. And from that vision, we build that out, that performance metric.
Are you just working with men, with male golfers?
I am.
And so is there a reason for that, or is it just kind of how it emerged?
Interesting. I got asked to work with a female golfer, and I'm not opposed. I'm not opposed at all. I will tell you though, and I was just home visiting my son over the weekend, and he's 26. He'll be 27 on Christmas Day. And I have six brothers, and I do believe that my personality, I'm tough. I might look sweet, but I'm tough and I'm highly competitive, may be more received from a male versus a female. But I had females work for me, and I have the people in corporate are females. So I can't really I don't really know why it's males, but I believe it's because of the development of the PGA Tour versus the LPGA, like where they are in its maturity. And my husband works in PGA golf and operations, so I got exposed to a lot of golfers, like the whole behind the scenes, if you will, learning from ground up. And it just seems to be where there's a fit. I don't know that this is my be-all definition of where I will go. And I'm actually purposely not building a business plan to include or not include females or males. Yep. I'm letting it show up.
You just go
about the right player.
Yeah.
And I've turned down six players. I've turned down one that people would say, what the hell? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
And the reason being is if I can't create trust and foster that vulnerability, then I'm really not going to serve them. And it's going to be a failure on my list. And so then it's going to ultimately hinder my growth.
Yeah.
I know where I can work well and I can't work well. I think 54, I know that about myself now. And having that knowledge is really powerful. So I don't waste a player's time, because I never want to be the person that, you know, you hear players say, yeah, I switched my clubs, I switched this coach, and I'll shit it to hell. I don't want to be the person they say, I shit the bed when Amy came on my team.
Right.
That's not going to say.
Well, men are probably low hanging fruit too, because we're more mentally and emotionally fragile. And women and less vulnerable, and so yeah.
You know what's funny though too, I will also say that my age with the average player, I'm more mature than them in age, and so there's trust, and I believe my background gives me some credibility
for sure,
and it's been easier to transition over.
Yeah, for sure. So Amy, are there no boundaries at all to your relationship with the golfer and or the team?
I mean, there is but we're, you know, it's as needed. You know, there's the routine type of calls and time together in person, but I want to be a resource. If there's something that happens, they can reach out to me. And my commitment is I will respond as soon as I can. I haven't really been put in a situation where it's like 911. I also have intuition to know somebody might be needing a call from me because of something, right? So I can just send a little message. And so that's when I say on demand, I don't want them to wait until it festers. I don't want it to be held back, because then now we got a problem we got to fix versus, we've got a bump we got to overcome. Or we've got an opportunity here to take this and turn it into a great growth opportunity.
Yep.
So the more willing they are to bring me along and or the team along, I mean, honestly, it's just power. It's really powerful. Yeah. It's fun. We have a lot more fun.
Yeah.
What causes in this role, I'm curious, what is most likely to cause you stress or anxiety?
Failing the player. I don't want to fail.
But what does that look like? Like what are you seeing when you think, oh, I may be not pulling, you know,
well, you talked about earlier, Dynamite says when to shut up. I have to walk a fine line of when to push, when to challenge, when to call bullshit, and when to listen. It's what causes me anxiety is making, I've tried to be incredibly aware of the strategy I'm putting before them, that the ask I have in their discipline. Because if I were to, I asked them, is this working? Is this not working? Give me feedback. What do you like about what we're building so far? Where do we need to make changes? Because no two players are alike. So what I would say brings me anxiety is the right thing at the right time, but not letting something go on too long. Right. Mm-hmm. So I have a player that when I speak and I say something around discipline automatically thinks that when I say that, I'm telling them that they need to do better balancing their work life. And I'm not at all. And I have to say it over and over. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But I have to be the one that brings it up because the team sometimes can't. So I'm like the good cop, the bad cop, and but I'm not the cop I'm bringing it together in the sense that without utilizing any situation, name, or individual, I'm reinforcing the goals that we had and how are we showing up? What are we doing? What do we need to do better?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's interesting.
Really a lot of that is just asking the right questions. And I got to be very mindful. Like we're in corporate. I was the senior vice president of North America. I could ask a question. I have to think about how are they going to interpret that question at this time? Is that the right question?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also interesting that you said about the team that somebody on the team might not be able to bring something up. And so the dynamic of every team is different too. So you said, oh, they, you know, maybe one of the coaches, maybe the caddy, maybe the spouse wants to get something, you know, to the golfer that impacts performance in some form or fashion, but they're uncomfortable saying it. Do you now become a channel for that?
Well, I try to bring it up in a way where it allows them to have that conversation where it's not necessarily, maybe I got told something that really bothered somebody. I don't bring it up right away. I wait till it wouldn't be obvious. Yeah. And I don't bring it up in a conversation like, hey, it's more around a situation. Are we seeing a pattern around this behavior and how does that affect the team? What do you think? And I don't, because it's really not the way we want to do this is to enhance communication. So I never want the team not to communicate. I want to help them find the right way to communicate. And so I don't bring it up perhaps in that way. I bring it up more in a discussion of a conversation that then they're all sharing. And believe it or not, the players want it. They want it. Yeah, they are. The individuals that I'm working with, I felt incredibly blessed. I know that the right team is coming before me today that I'm supposed to be working with.
Because some people probably think they're weak if they're not solitary and on their own and doing it. If they're asking others for help, some of them I would think, based on how they are, would think they're weak or they're not, you know.
I haven't ran across that as much.
That's good.
I will say one situation, the player has a harder time accepting that he isn't weak.
Yeah.
Because he has the opportunity to grow in this area. Meaning that it's not that something's wrong. It's like, it's not no different than anything else. Like, how do we be better? How do we do, how can we get more consistent in this game of golf?
Yeah.
And how do we huddle before, how do we reflect after? I mean, things that prior they hadn't done. Caddies, you can ask Patton and Dean that they would get together. They might have talked about their game plan for the day and the rules, but like really like pregame round, like what does that look like? And what is a huddle? How do we reflect afterwards? And taking the time to do so, so we capture it in the moment, we don't lose it. Because I mean, there's so much lessons learned, right, when we reflect. Yeah.
Cool.
I'm so fascinated with this. I love hearing your perspective. It makes me really curious about like what was it like in the 70s when Watson and Seve and Nicklaus were out there, probably going it a lot more solo. But what could have been if they would have had a little bit of help? Who knows?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I started this idea and I went to Davis Love because I have a friendship with him through my husband. Robin and him are friends of ours. And I said, I want to do this. And this is what I'm thinking. What do you think? And, you know, we just would have conversations. And over a course of, let's say we met a couple of times, he helped give me insight to a typical golfer's career, not only on the course and off the course, but overlapping with life and areas of opportunities where there were gaps and wow, wouldn't this have been great to have? And so that got me really curious. Then I spent some time just getting to know individual golfers that I wasn't even telling them that I was going to do this. I just had the access to them. So I just spent some time with them. And, you know, a lot of this is just relationship and being relatable. Really, it's bringing a team together to maximize the performance and have, I mean, they all want to have fun and fun. Yeah. When you win, it's a hell of a lot of fun, but you know, when you perform better than you performed the week before, it should be a hell of a lot of fun too. If we're making strides, we should celebrate. So we have a reinforcement. So it's really cool. I mean, you know, my brother said, how the hell are you coaching PGA golfers? I don't even play golf. I said, that's the whole point.
Right.
I don't play golf to coach them. And right. You know, honestly, now I know they're really proud of me because I dared to do me. And I'm just super excited to see where this will go. It'll be fun. And the continued success of the teams I'm working with.
We wish you the best. But before we go,
okay.
Chris has three questions for you.
Oh, Chris.
Wow, long dramatic pause. Before we go there, is there anything else you wanted to add, Amy, or anything else that you wanted to cover with us? Or
yeah, this has been great. Hopefully.
Yeah, super fun.
Yeah,
well, you've captivated us because we're nerds, we're golf nerds especially. But here are your three questions, and sort of coincidentally, the first question is almost a reverse of the letter that you have your players write to their current selves, and that question is, what do you wish you could have told your 10-year-old self?
I wish I would have told my 10-year-old self to let your light shine. Is it took me a lot of years of being really successful before I really, my aunt, my nieces and nephews call me Crazy and Amy. My players probably would say I'm crazy. My friends call me Crazy Amy. And you know what? This Crazy Amy doing what she loves. So I would have said, be okay with it. Cause I was special.
Okay, yeah. Crazy Amy.
Should that be the title?
Two.
Should that be the title of the podcast? Crazy Amy? No.
Yeah, I'm dead serious. I mean, my girlfriends, when all this came out, said, of course you won two championships one day and you have your players hugging trees. You're crazy.
Yeah.
And that tree movement's going to get bigger because we're actually going to do a tree challenge, like ASL challenge, like the bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got players willing to lead it. And we're going to do it for Parkinson's and lung cancer. So stay tuned. You'll be hugging a tree.
Awesome.
I will.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Second question is, do you have a mantra in life or a mantra these days?
Yeah, just keep believing. Keep believing, whether it's in your personal life, overcoming life circumstances or your dreams, just keep believing. It's big. It's actually something that I have on affirmations that I believe.
Mm-hmm. So, a great message and succinct, and I love it. The last question is, what do you hope that people will say about you at your wake?
Oh, gosh. That's a crazy one. I
but you're crazy, this, Amy. So
I am crazy. I literally was asked this years ago, and I would hope that they would say that I was someone that inspired them to live their life fully for what their purpose that they know was, meaning that, you know, do what they want to do and bring more of themselves, that I was a caring individual that brought value, and that I had a heck of a lot of fun with them in various ways. Mm-hmm. I want to have fun.
Perfect.
Amy, thanks for coming to hang out with us. And thank you for, Patton's a wonderful man, and Dean really likes him a lot. And so thank you for helping them to, you know, increase their performance and do great. So it's really cool.
Yeah, they're good. I'm lucky to be a part of their team. Really lucky. I don't take it for granted, and for others as well. But Dynamite, Pat and I have a really great bond. So hopefully we'll see some excellent results here in the next few tournaments.
Yeah, it'd be great
here.
Yeah. Thanks for your time.
All right.
Peace. Take care. Bye. Bye-bye.
See ya. This is Chris. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of If You've Come This Far.
And this is Sean. Remember to check us out, mnliving.org.